Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
The Market Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell.
Hello and welcome to the Market Musings Podcast, where today we're joined by the President and CEO of West Mining Corp, Nicholas Houghton. Nicholas, I know you called you Nicholas, it's probably Nick you prefer, isn't it? But you're very welcome. How are you?
Only my mother calls me Nicholas when I'm in trouble. I'm great.
Good. Yeah, well, it's good to have you on, Nick. It's good to have you on. And of course, we're joined by Kenny as well.
Yeah, my mother calls me Kenneth. That's the only person that calls me Kenneth as well. So, yeah, it must be a common mother theme.
But, it's a thing, isn't it? It's a thing.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's great to have you on, Nick. And I've not had the pleasure of speaking to you before. So, yeah, most welcome on the podcast. And hopefully you can understand me.
Thank you for inviting me. Great.
No, it's good. I know we did an interview, me and you, Nick, not so long ago on West Mining, which is, of course, listed in Canada on the Canadian Stock Exchange. And, yeah, it's great to have you on this podcast where it's slightly more relaxed and we like to go back and learn about, you know, the people behind the business and you being the head honcho at West Mining Corp. Then we'd like to, you know, sort of do that with you, really. So, what we tend to do is just sort of, you know, open the floor to yourself and say, you know, go back as far as you want, go back to school or university or wherever you feel like, and perhaps give us a bit of your history and where you sort of come from.
Oh, it'd be a pleasure. I didn't start off in this industry. I had no idea actually when I was at school what I wanted to do upon leaving school. Mm. I don't think many people have, unless they're going on to training college, you know, like to universities, or they realize they want to be a teacher or architect or lawyers. But, I'll go back a bit. Growing up in West Brom, West Brom is obviously in the part of the industrial Midlands there. There wasn't really a lot of choices when you left school. You're either going to go and work at Lucas's as a machinist, or, you know, just do these type of things. I was extremely lucky that when I did come out of school, I managed to get an apprenticeship at the beloved H. Samuels Jewellery Company, which I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with. The one thing you have in Birmingham, and West Brom is just a couple of miles out of Birmingham, is a very large jewellery quarter for all the manufacturing. I'm going back a few years, obviously, when I did do it. And this was actually, you know, I left school 74. I went straight in to do a 5-year apprenticeship at H. Samuels, which was one of the best things I could have had. It was absolutely fabulous. Mm-hmm. Great bunch of lads working with. And they taught me something which I've carried on throughout my career, which is, Don't be scared to share secrets. Pass on knowledge. You know, especially when you're working in a trade, or as we come further along, you're working in mining and all this. Never be scared to share the knowledge you have, because that's how companies grow and that's how people develop. I think there's far too many people now sort of cluster and cloister too much information, never gets shared. So I've always been of the opinion that share it, trust people and share it. There are people who will abuse it, and you tend to get a little bit burnt with that. But going on, I've realised, you know, as I say, I always talk goldsmithing and jewellery manufacturing, and the methodology we use and the way we used to make stuff is not, it's just not prevalent anymore. People can't make jewellery the way we used to make it from absolute scratch. And so, you know, these sort of things, this is information you have to pass on. I was also very lucky. I did sort of, with the five-year apprenticeship, I got the day release, which is not a prison sentence. It is actually going to Birmingham Polytechnic. The beauty of this is it's now come under Birmingham University, so I can actually say I came from Birmingham University.
Okay.
Things work out quite well. But no, what that happened to do is with trade schools, you do the, you know, the beautiful thing of the City and Guilds exams, which, you know, as far as trade recognition, they're excellent. I mean, they teach you sort of all the different aspects, theories, designs, and everything, and they're not easy. So I was lucky enough to, you know, get my City and Guilds Advanced and the five-year apprenticeship indentured, which these papers allowed me to travel, and left England in 1982, and I actually moved to Bermuda for 11 years. Okay. So, I mean, this is a roundabout way of where are we today, mm-hmm. type of thing. So I moved out to Bermuda, and again, I've been very, very fortunate that, again, in Bermuda, we met a lot of people that we'd have never had exposure to, you know. You know, when you live in a city, say you live in Birmingham, say you live in West Brom, and say, you know, you've come from your school and you've gone to the work and you've got your mates. You know, generally, those are the crowd that you keep in touch with. Those are the crowd you share ideas with. Well, going to Bermuda, which is, you know, it's 20 miles long and a mile wide. It's this speck of an island in the middle of the Atlantic, and it's absolutely gorgeous. What you get exposure to all runs of people, bankers, lawyers, you know, jewelers, welders, everybody, and they all communicate, they all mix, and they all congregate together. So you get this, again, another fortuitous experience of meeting and talking with people from totally different backgrounds, totally different religions, creeds, colours, everything, and just all basically getting on together. Teaches you several things. Teach you to respect other people, also teach you how to communicate with different people. So, you know, 11 years in Bermuda was fantastic. You know, I was working on the bench, then I went into management, then I became owner of partial owner of the jewelry company and manufacturer I was working for. We, you know, it was quite good. We had four stores there. But as mentioned earlier, it's a small place and you need to sort of expand and change a bit. So me and the wife decided one day, well, where should we go next? And it's as simple as that. And we come to Vancouver on vacation. Really love the place. So we thought, you know what? Why don't we apply to come to Canada? You know, what the hell? What else can they can only say no? And as it worked out, we got landed immigrant status. And we moved to Vancouver with two suitcases, no jobs, no real worries. So, you know, slightly blinded by the light maybe, but no real worries. So we came here. We didn't know anybody here. We had a couple of friends we knew from Bermuda and that was it. We ain't got any family here. So we moved here. And the reason was in Bermuda, I couldn't have my own business. I can come to Canada. And with landed immigrant status, it gave me the ability to open up my own business. So I went straight back to my roots and worked on the jewelry manufacturing on the bench for a very prestigious jewelry company here, Brinkhouse Jewelers. Again, thank them for giving me the opportunity. But I always wanted my own business. I wanted to be a diamond broker. And so after, you know, 10 months, and now you build up the credit and everything else, I quit and we owned up. I owned up my own business. So from there, you know, you jump straight in and you go for it. And so I had my diamond broker's business and progressed doing wholesale. It was great. Traveling to Israel, India, Belgium, buying loose goods, loose stones, diamonds, mainly. Some colored stones, some gemstones. You know, I'm also, as well as jewelry, I'm also a gemologist and everything else. So that, you know, it went great. Then around about 2000, the Canadian government announced that, you know, we're going to be signatories to the Canadian Code of Conduct with diamonds. So I formed a company called Cadium, and we actually had a fabulous trademark, a little tiny snowflake that we'd engrave on the side of diamonds. And what we did, and myself and two partners, owned up a diamond polishing factory in Vancouver. A little advice to any of the listeners here, if there's anybody listening, it is the quickest way of losing money. If you want to, if you have some money squirreled away somewhere, in a fastest manner, it's quick as the casinos, open up a diamond polishing factory when you're based in Vancouver, a very expensive city, and you're competing with India and Vietnam. So, you know, it was a learning curve. It wasn't too bad. We actually polished the largest diamond ever polished in Canada. It wasn't a Canadian piece of rough from the Ekati mine or anything, or diving. It was a Brazilian piece of rough, which was just over 300 carat, and it was polished into a 60 carat plus pear shape. And I don't get me wrong, don't please say, oh, that's total bull, but I don't think anybody's polished any stones as big as that in Canada. In fact, the Canadian polishing industry is finished. It is no longer really going, which is a sad, sad thing. But the diamond industry itself is in turmoil. So.
Okay.
Where we go with this is we decided to wrap up the business. I took it over fully 100%. My two partners sort of, we had shook hands, walk away. We're still friends. Mm. So there was no animosity whatsoever. And then I have this big space, which is, it's got security, it's got safes and everything else. And there's three of us rattling around in it, basically, doing wholesale. And True North Gems came to me, the CEO at the time, who was Andrew Smith, and said, could we sublease space from you? Because we have an emerald project in the Yukon, and we're going to be needing secured premises. I'm like, great, fabulous, come on, you know, let's share. So this was in the early 2000s. So what we did from there is True North Gems came in, shared my space. They asked me to join the board, which I joined the board. Got a little bit more exposure, obviously, to public companies and what have you. My wife had worked for Western Copper and Gold previously, Western Silver. And they had the Peñasquito mine in Mexico, which I'd seen them develop from a grassroots exploration into being taken over by Glamis Corp for $1.6 billion. And all this occurred during the BRIEX fiasco, where they, you know, they're doing great with the company. BRIEX came in, basically wiped out the complete mining sector. And so everything had to be rebuilt. So I'd seen this and had firsthand knowledge of, you know, building a company, bringing in geologists and everything else. Again, the executives at Western were great. Again, they shared knowledge, Dale Corman and Tom Patton, Dr. Don Patton. I have been very, very fortunate to have great people to sort of share and bounce ideas off. So, you know, we moved to True North Gems.
Mm-hmm.
And we had at the time the Emerald Project in the Yukon, Sapphire Project, Baffin Island, and then we went to Greenland and did some grassroots discovery on the Ruby Project in Greenland. Mm-hmm. CEO at the time, Andrew, was more gold-focused, and obviously my background, I'm gemstone, rough, polished, manufacture, finish, sell. So I moved into the CEO role and took the company from basically exploration all the way through to permitting and onto being granted a mining license and building a mine in Appaloosuck in Greenland. Didn't end so well on that particular one. Felt it was a bit short-sighted by joint venture partners and possibly the government. We had to declare bankruptcy, in fact, on the subsidiary. So, you know, that didn't fare so well. It was an unfortunate ending. I'm not going to dwell on it. It is what it is. And you take a lesson, you take, you take the number of the buzz and you move on from there. Hmm. So following that, I'll be honest with you, Martin, Ken, I actually took some time out. I regrouped. Hmm. And then you realize who your friends are and who the people are who really weren't your friends. And a few lads came and said, look, you know, you got shafted on that one, mate. Didn't work out so well. Why don't we look at some more, doing another project? And I point blank said, no, I'm not really interested. And they said, okay, look, why don't we start doing finance and look at other companies? I said, okay. So what we did was a group of us, we started doing finance. We financed a couple of marijuana companies that came through in Canada. And then, you know, you end up back on the horse. So, and mining is a fabulous business. You know as well as I do, it's great business. So, you know, I got into the marijuana, we financed, that went really well. And so started to look at mining opportunities again. And myself and an associate realized that there was a vehicle out there that was sort of waiting for a qualifying transaction. So what we did, we actually bought up the escrow shares, you know, threw the money down on the table and took over what was then Ironwood Capital, looked for projects. And, you know, again, mining sector at that particular time, and I'm going back 2 years, it wasn't doing anything. You know, commodities fairly flat. You know, it would show a little bit here and there. You know, marijuana was, you know, the cannabis industry in Canada, it took out a lot of money. You know, as works in our industry, certain sectors get financed. They take out a chunk of the money. It slowly comes back. It comes back into the arena. And other things there, because marijuana, and blockchain, and, you know, all these different things. But we thought, we had this sort of idea, you know, mining has to come back. It has to be, this sector has to start again, per se, because all the old mines out there, there are no new mines being discovered. There's no new mines being built. Old mines are being depleted. And, you know, industry has to keep going. So we looked and we, again, had the fortune to find a good qualifying transaction, which was a Cagoo property in New Brunswick. So we did this and we actually formed West Mining. It was only end of October 2020. From there, again, we managed to find the properties that we have now, our flagship property, which is the Key in the Daylight project in Nelson. We had meetings with Apex Resources, we had meetings with Boundary and Bryce, people who held the options. We managed to strike a deal. And then what the deal was at that particular time, we had the right to earn 80% of the project by doing a 2 million exploration program to cement the deal and take the extra 20%, it would have been a $2 million payout after 2 years. So we looked at all the historic data. As I say, I'm not a geologist. I haven't got the qualifications. I'm more of a geologist by osmosis from being in meetings and listening and sort of, you know, having that wonderful exposure to it. And we started looking and thought, you know what? This has got great potential. And subsequently, since, say, November last year, we have gone to market. We have raised a total of just under 10 million. And we have put money in the bank. We have put out a press release, went out, in fact, a couple of weeks ago or 10 days ago, where we are now going to acquire sole rights to 100%. We're buying this project 100% in a deal which, by the time you take into consideration the money we're going to spend and the play, the shares that we have to hand out as part of the deal, I worked out on the day of we cemented it, which is April the 7th, it cost us around about $6 million. $6 million Canadian. And that brings us a project which is 18 kilometers long, has historic gold mines, has produced gold, has an excellent copper anomaly that we're looking at. And we just put out another press release that we flew the southern section, which is actually 40% of the project and had never been flown before. And the preliminary information we get is the mineralization continues perfectly down into the center of this. So in a very short space of time in Reno, in a sort of 6 month span, we've gone from being a listed shell company with a qualifying transaction to having a first-class exploration company with advanced exploration, which has been done on the Kiena project, Kiena Daylight project, and going forward. I also managed to add on to it another project which is continuous at the top, which is the Athabasca California Princess project, which again has historic gold mines. They've had numbers at sort of 30 grams a ton in there. So we've fast-tracked, we've worked hard, we've pushed really, really hard to get this where it is. We are actually going through the completion of a new 43-101 report. And I thank the independents for doing that, because there was a lot of data that they had to pull together. There's been 20 years of exploration, sampling, trenching, drilling completed on this project through five or six different companies and obviously the same amount of geologists. So they've had to pull information together, which was all different databases. So in the upcoming few weeks, we're going to have all of this coming through. Now, you say to yourself, well, the stock did look good, but now you're in the tank. Well, admittedly, the stock, we have took a bit of a hit of late. We did financing at 18 cents and that sort of, there's profit being taken out of the market where we had some selling from 80 cents all the way down to 30. Now, it's part and parcel of the business. Mm-hmm. You know, we are in this business for making profit, and investors have total right to sell and make profit. You don't like to see your stock go down, but with the fundamentals and what we have in the company, I actually know that, you know, this is not long-term. It's profit-taking, and I have no problem to the shareholders who are taking a profit, because those shareholders are taking a profit. Also put $3 million in my bank account. This is this sector. And now it's up to myself, my geological team, and everybody at the company to prove up this property and take it up to that next level. And again, allow shareholders to profit. You know, if you're going to invest, if you're going to put down money into a company, you'll look at the projects, you look at the sectors they're in, but you also put money on the management team. And I want to thank people for putting money into the management team, and we hope to reward them beneficially as we go forward. That's basically where we stand at the present. You know, I've come from West Brom. I'm now sitting in Vancouver. Our office is in the penthouse suite at Bentall 4, and I've got a magnificent view over English Bay. So don't get me wrong. There's been some kicks in the bum along the way, but it's not been too bad, lads. It's not been too bad.
Good.
It doesn't sound like quite a journey. It is quite a journey. It's quite unusual. I mean, we get all sorts of people on here, and some of the journeys to, you know, where they are now are pretty standard. But I would say yours falls into one of the more unusual journeys, but certainly sounds quite enjoyable. I mean, I've not been to Bermuda, but I've been to Jamaica.
Yeah, I mean, it's been great. It really has. Yeah.
The Caribbean's great. I keep promise myself to go back because I get married in the Caribbean, but I've just never managed to get round to it. But
I'll definitely
go back. Yeah, I got married in Jamaica, but I keep saying my wife will go back for a month this time, and we'll maybe do a bit of island hopping or something like that. So it's just getting the time and planning.
I see, if you get to go back down there, if you get the chance, I know St. Vincent just had a hurricane go up, but St. Vincent and the Grenadines, there's a little beautiful string of islands you can sail along. I mean, obviously, we're talking totally. Maybe we should get into the tourist industry as well, mate. But the Grenadines are a beautiful island to sail around, and I've sailed that, and I've sailed the BVI, British Virgin Islands, a couple of times. So, it's as I say, yeah, it's been a bloody awful life.
Yeah. And one thing,
you know, I mean, at the end of the day, we've got to earn money to pay for this. So,
yeah.
The symbol is WEST. The symbol is West. We're on the Canadian Stock Exchange.
we'll plug it as well. Don't worry. We'll get it out there in the tweet with the podcast. But one thing I did like from your story was you said you were a geologist from Osmosis. So I'm now going to use that excuse for my drinking problem. I'm going to say it was from Osmosis as well. Been around for many years. Too many hardened drinkers down the Bone Club. That's how I ended up.
I think that's so just hereditary. That's not osmosis.
But it sounds good. It sounds good. I'll use that one. Sometimes it's. There's certainly. I mean, I've been looking at the presentation obviously before the podcast, and there's certainly a lot of scope for increasing the resource. You know, in various. You know, various different projects. I mean, I was just looking there. So, wait a minute. The Kena project. So, there's potentially eight further target areas within that footprint.
Correct. Yeah. This year's the field season, the upcoming field season. I mean, discussion with the geo team again, headed by Linda Dandy. Again, fortuitous that we've managed to bring Linda in, because Linda was responsible for doing the geology with Apex and Salt and the previous owners of it. And she discovered the copper zone, the gold copper zone in Kena, which, again, I take my hat off to geologists, patience, following the, you know, the actual clues that you get, rather than leaping from pillar to post. And what it was, we have in that top section, the daylight section, narrow vein gold type of occurrence. So the daylight portion, as I say, it's got historic mines on it. I believe there's four historic mines there. And we're going back to the gold rush days and the silver rush days, when, you know, the early 1900s, when the explorers came through British Columbia. And, you know, went all the way, you know, you'd either go one way up through the Hope Hope Valley, Hope River and all the way up that side, or you go across the Kootenays. So if you drive through the Kootenays, if you take that road that leads you to Nelson, then further up to Revelstoke, you go through all these little mining towns. And the one common feature I found was every one of these little high streets had a building of old red brick with a keystone in it, and the date was either 1895 to 1905. All the way through, I mean, I did the wonderful trip last year. So you can see that there's this hush, historic mining region all the way through the Kootenay Arc. So what we have with our Keener Daylight, the daylight section up top has had historic mining. The top of Keener has had historic mining. But it had never come down and been examined for anything else just in that middle region. Now, Linda Dandy discovered the copper zone. They put some drill holes into it and started to come with some great copper numbers. I looked, you know, we came into this, we looked at it, I did some, you know, research, looked at the data, went through all the historic reports, and I saw that the southern zone, which I mentioned earlier, had no work on it, no geophysics, no nothing. So I asked, and they said, well, it was inaccessible. You know, it was, we couldn't sample there. It was just all, you know, it was treed. So I said, oh, okay. And then found out that since then it's all locked and everything else. I just wanted to know. So we flew it. And as I've said, that zone, that anomalous mineralization comes all the way down. So this year, coming back to your original question, Ken, we have our targets. Our permits, we have a permit to drill daylight on the gold section. We have permits in going through approval at the moment to open up and start putting more drill sections into the Keener, the copper zone. So this year's field season, we are going to be drilling, making sure, drill off, look at the high-grade zone section, confirm the 15 grams per tonne and these sort of numbers. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, possible, do we do sort of a small-scale grab or something else? We are then going to swing down, and we want to put in deep holes into that copper section, 400, 500-metre holes. It's still in discussion. So we haven't firmed up yet. We have a contractor. We've managed, again, to bring the drilling contractor who's done previous drilling on the site. You know, he lives 20 kilometres away. And, again, you know, it's just, for him, he's like, I'd love to get back in and prove up what we've done. With Linda, she can't wait to get back in and sort of take it to the next level. Mm-hmm. We're going to be sampling on the further southern zone, which is 40% of the project, which has never been touched. So we can do sampling and we can start doing some rudimentary exploration work on there. We have the team in place also for that. So targeting this year, drill high grade, drill copper, sample down below where we know there's copper outshowings. It's going to be a full-on season, absolutely full-on season. The money's in the bank to cover it as well.
Yeah, so sounds like, as you say, a full-on news fest. One thing I was going to ask, obviously, the infrastructure's in place. What about the climate in British Columbia? Let's compare it to, say, Ontario, which I'm a bit more familiar with. What's the climate like?
We can go, where we are in Nelson, the interior tends to, you know, have snow, get snow a little earlier. Snow hangs around a little later. You've got north-facing slopes, it will hang around. What we have on the Keener project is the snow on the southern zone is now gone. Mm-hmm. It doesn't prevent, if you've got an area which is topographically accessible, you can still work in the winter. It's not as if we're in the Arctic. It's not as if we're having to put in any ice roads or anything else. The one thing is what you people are familiar with is British Columbia is spectacular. It gets rain, it gets snow. It will prevent, obviously, soil sampling, grab sampling, trenching when you got the snow. But our actual area, as far as Mobig in and everything else, it's easy. It's highways, it's roads, it's logging trails. There's no requirement for helicopters. Other projects I've worked on, you've got to, fly in, camp, set up your helicopter, your fuels and everything else. None of that. It's not remote. It's accessible. Mm-hmm. The Tech Minco smelter is just 45 kilometers down the road. And that's actually down the road from Nelson. From the southern end of our deposit, the Tech Minco smelter is probably only about 25 kilometers. So the actual area itself is conducive to exploration and mining.
So what is the long-term plan? Is it to ship the ore to another processing plant?
We know that we're at early stage with with the copper. If we want to go in and do, we've left. It's a big project, but it's in three permitted and claimed areas. It's the Daylight Zone, the Kiena property, and then the Athabasca property. Deliberately, we're leaving these as three separate claim areas because there are NSRs granted to them for, different claims that was combined, but the NSRs vary. So we want to, Kiena has 2% on a couple of claims. I've just granted Apex a 1% who for us taking off the project from them. Daylight has four different claims with 1.5 and 2. So there's all different things. So we're leaving these as separate. But what this does do, if they were as combined as one and we wanted to do a sort of mini bulk sampling, you're allowed 10,000 tons. But because we have three projects, we're allowed three lots of 10,000 tons.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It can triple our output. Mm-hmm. Plus, if we want to go into sort of short-term mining, bulk extraction, you're allowed 75,000 tons. Again, if we combine everything, we're allowed 75,000 tons. If you leave them as three, you're allowed 225,000 tons. Now, we could put rudimentary crush screen wash, on the property, no problem, and then ship the ore out for refining. That would be really gold. Copper, what we're going to be looking at is, this is a porphyry, and we've got two styles of mineralization. We've got the narrow vein gold up to the north, which is Athabasca and also the Daylight. We have a shear zone, the volcanic zone, which breaks off, and the copper coming into the southern, we all intents and purposes, it's a pore-free mineralization. So we know this is going to be a different kettle of fish, shall we say. Mm-hmm. We understand it. We know it. It is our job, our role, to firm up and prove up this resource. It is my job to lead the geology team in that, but also look at suitors to come in and either assist us or start to look at, the potential here is true. And maybe we should take a hard look at if we want to sort of take it over. I know as a junior mining company, my role. Mm-hmm. We all do know. We all know that role. For me to take something to the production of this mass, you've got to firm up your team, you've got to employ, you've got to do so many different studies. There are companies out there who have these in place, and that is the way I see this company proceeding and moving forward and benefiting the shareholders.
Yeah, definitely.
That's our job, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just an afterthought, if you any consideration of maybe Joe listening in the UK, obviously you're from the UK yourself, Nick. Is that something that you've thought about? Or
I looked at a couple of projects in Scotland.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, there is. There was a couple of projects, copper projects that we looked at in Scotland, which we tried to tried to negotiate to take, which didn't happen. And if that would have come about, then dual listing would have been on the table, you know, for Defna. I looked at dual listing, in fact, when I was with True North Gems, and the one thing I do find is, especially now, this the situation with COVID is obviously, I was dual listed, it would have been just a massive expense to keep it up, and I wouldn't have been able to travel over, because, you know, if you're going to be dual listed on the London market or in the UK, you have to be there to, you know, talk about things with your investors, show your investors where you're going. You can't just dual list and leave it. I'm not a fan of that. You know, I'm all for, if you're going to go into these things, do it properly. The cost of dual listing is expensive. You know, it's more expensive than listing on the CSE or TSX. And obviously, it can really double your G&A. At the present moment in time, I want to put money into the ground. I want to put money in to get the drills turning and get deep into the ground. Going forward, as we do hopefully build, as we do prove up this resource, and as we do, as we get the opportunity to prove our geologists correct by supplying the money and the fuel for them to carry on and finish their job, dual listing would be on the table, because you move into a different realm. For the team, though, it's not a high priority, I'll be honest.
Yeah. I mean, what the TSX offers UK investors is a whole new, you know, the way I look at it is, you know, the London stock market is like a small swimming pool, but the TSX is like an Olympic swimming pool. There's just so many opportunities and companies, and, you know, trying to get access to that market, because the brokers are just a bit behind at the moment, and it's really quite difficult for UK punters sometimes to trade easily, you know. And it's all right getting a paper certificate from a TSX company, but try and get that bloody electronically put onto one of your broker accounts. It's just not feasible at the moment, really.
No, I'll be honest with you. I don't. Everybody's talking about online brokerage accounts, and you hear a lot about Questrade and all these American things. It isn't easy to trade yourself online, and you can miss selling and you can miss this. I think if you're UK based and you have an account with Canaccord Genuity, as they are, you know, obviously big Canadian established brokerage, then there is an ease of trading there, whether you're on the CSE, the TSX, or the TSX main board. I believe if you open up an account with RBC, again, you've got that ease. But what tends to happen is, I know with the London brokers and stuff, it's like, oh, yeah, well, we can do it, but, and it's sort of like, oh, yeah. I think as we go forward and there is far more online trading, it's strange. There was a news article yesterday I just read. It's called Wealth Simple, and they're just listed yesterday or the day before. Company's been around for 6 years, and they're worth $5 billion. And this is really simplifying banking, trading, and stocks and everything. They've just raised 750, so they're coming to a phone screen near you shortly. It's a Canadian-based company. So as things do go forward, there will be more global trading. It's the same with trying to trade on the ASX. I looked at opening up an account on the ASX. Forgive my French, it was a right pain in the ass. It was, I couldn't, you know, the Australian Stock Exchange, it's, forget it.
I think the KYC is hard enough for an individual, but a business is even worse, especially if you've got several directors. But hopefully it'll get resolved in that. If the UK punters could get access to the TSX, it would be a win-win situation for everybody, I think, because there is a lot of hot money in the UK, definitely.
Oh, and that way of thinking, I mean, what you've got with the UK is, it doesn't sound, but he's very exposed to mining. He's so familiar with African mining. He's so familiar with everything else, you know. But as you say, there's possibly the old school mentality, a bit of protectionism going on there, that, oh, let's just keep it to the UK sucks. You know, if I thought there was the right avenue to dual list, I'd consider it. How easy is it for UK punters to trade on the German exchange, the Frankfurt exchange?
Something I've never even looked into.
No, because obviously West Mining's on Frankfurt and the Frankfurt. OTC, isn't it? Yeah, so...
Yeah. I mean, I'll find any way to take their money, mate. Don't get me wrong on that. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I seriously don't know if it possibly like a... I mean, you can't joint merge or somebody get a listing, but... I'll be honest, lads, at the present moment in time, that one's not on the sort of high on the charts as far as consideration. I have no problem whatsoever coming through and discussing and meeting UK investors. I love it, absolutely love it. You know, I'll give you a chance to go down the pub. unfortunately, give me a chance to go and watch West Bromwich Albion as well. But I used to come through the UK all the time, obviously True North, and had a very close relationship with Jem Fields and the boys down there. It's a possibility, but not in the near future. As I say, we're going to be putting our dollars into the ground this year and next year. The Treasury is buoyant enough for, you know, we've got 2 years of financial safety going forward. I've been offered credit facilities already, which is, it's great. Copper, you know, it's up 28% year to date. It is not going to go down. With the US economy stimulus as far as money going into manufacturing, not only, everybody looks at, obviously, electric cars, electric scooters and everything else, but... They're pushing manufacturing in fridges, freezers, air conditioners. Copper, 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 copper. You go into wind turbines, water turbines, everything else. Copper, copper, copper. The Shanghai Motor Show was just 3 weeks ago. And three of the biggest exhibitors were Chinese car manufacturers, and all they had was electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. And these vehicles, they were fabulous cars, gorgeous cars. And again, we know what it takes. It takes copper to go in these cars, as well as, you know, lithiums and cobalts and everything else. So I looked at it, I'm like, wow, this is incredible. Two of the biggest investors in these Chinese manufacturers are Volvo, and I believe Volvo is part owned by Ford, and Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett, massive investment in these companies. So, you know, those two people have been around quite some time. They understand markets. So two things we have is US economy, worldwide economy, global economy. It's been printing money. It's been, you know, the printing presses have been running 24 hours a day. Will inflation come? Is gold going to be required as a hedge? Strange enough, gold has been quiet. This year it's been very quiet. Mm. Gold needs to get through the 1800 ounce barrier. I think it's going to push through in a month or so. And I think once it does push through, it can consolidate and get a new base. Copper. I don't see copper dropping whatsoever. I only see copper increasing. And so the reason that we've got to have this two-pillar exploration program this year is, obviously, we can go into gold production very quickly. It's surface. No problems there. We can raise money from gold. In fact, we could supplement the drilling program from small bulk sampling and drill even more holes into the copper. Where I want... 8 deep holes in the copper, get the results, get assays, get working on it, then start planning, hopefully, for step out and infill.
Okay.
It's exciting. We're only a small team. We're not bloated at all. So we're nimble, we're agile, and we're not scared of hard work.
Are you? How do you feel about this chat of commodities supercycle? Do you feel that's a real thing?
I do. There is a bit of a double-edged sword. There's a lot of people who are anti-mining. But to go to the protest, they'll take a bus or a train or an aeroplane. Yeah. You've got to remember this. Actually, it made me titter the other day. There's a protest in Vancouver against lithium company mining. And I'm like, you can't have it both ways, kids.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to, you know, agreed, mining has to be done respectfully. Mining has to be done with regard for the environment and regard for everything else. But isn't everything supposed to be like that?
Yeah.
You know? It is. That's just the natural.
Someone said something. They said, if you can't grow it, you've got to mine it.
Oh, so true. Yeah. You know? Unless you can recycle it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Presumably it's got to be mined or grown in the first place. Yeah, exactly. Actually, I think that was it. Was Christopher Gatison that said that from Nova? Is that right, Kenny?
Yeah,
Nova Minerals.
Nova Minerals, in Alaska. That was interesting. But I just very true, very true. Yeah. So I wonder, as we finish off, you started and you told us about you started in the jewelry business and then the diamond polishing.
Yeah.
Do you miss it? But is there a potential diamond project in the future, or are you happy with the shininess of gold?
Shininess of gold is okay for the time being.
Okay.
The diamond industry is, it's close to being in turmoil. The problem you got with, I'm going off track slightly, and it's solely my opinion. Rough diamond prices have sort of rebounded slightly lately, and obviously I follow it. It's in my blood. And you talk to any gemologist or any jeweler, and you'll see that once you've been indoctrinated into that, I had inoculation on my mind. Once you've been indoctrinated into that business, it never leaves you. There's nothing you can do about it. Diamonds have got obvious challenge from the man-made ones. They are 70% cheaper than mined diamonds, even though people don't realize that it takes far more energy to make a diamond than to mine the diamond. It's quite strange that they tend to forget that. So there's big challenges for diamond industry. I actually do see the colored stone sector getting stronger in jewelry.
Okay.
I've noticed at present, obviously I keep my fingers involved, I keep my fingers in the pulse with it. Jewelry is starting to come back a bit. I've got a lot of friends in manufacturing in Asia, and jewelry's coming back a bit. That diamond wholesaling, I've got friends in New York, that's coming back a bit. As far as myself going back into it, it would be purely as simply for the love of it. And I would actually go back into colored stones. I wouldn't go into diamonds. I would go and I would look at the big three, emeralds, rubies, and sapphires. Personally, I've had a lot of exposure with rubies because the mine we had in Greenland was rubies. So I had a lot of exposure to that. But at present, Mozambique is mining some very nice stones. Some beautiful rubies coming out of there. So there is, again, turmoil down there in the area with ISIS insurgents and stuff like that.
Mm.
But personally, if I was going to go into it, blue sapphire.
Yeah, I must admit, I was involved with a company called Sheffer Gems, which is in Israel, and they've got some interesting coloured gems as well, like caramel sapphire, moissanite as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, there's a spectacular sapphire, Pad Parasha. Pad Parasha sapphires come out generally out of Africa, Tanzania, Ethiopia areas and what have you. Tanzania's got some beautiful stones. And what you got with this Pad Parasha, it's like a iridescent peach, rich peach colour and pinks. And it's not a pink sapphire, it's more of that sort of peachy colour. That, to me, is absolutely stunning. Imperial topaz. People think of topaz as that blue stone. The blue topaz, which you get on the jewelry sales networks and on all the cruise ships and stuff like that, that's actually a white stone that's been bombarded with gamma rays and radioactive rays and all the other stuff to turn it blue. Whereas imperial topaz is this brilliant sherry pink red colour. It's a sherry pink. Cross between sherry pink. It's a stunning stone. And these are all naturally occurring stones. Mm-hmm. So this is what gets me. And Madagascar has got some beautiful blue sapphire mines. Absolutely gorgeous stones. I've looked, I still look at them. It's still in the blood. There's nothing I can do about it. But for the time being, I mean, I love our prospect with the copper and the gold. It's strange you say that. Do you know Galantis, the Irish gold company?
Yeah.
I'm very familiar with the Galantis and what have you. I was over there looking at that. And I built up a marketing program for them on their gold. It never commissioned, but I was looking to work with those as well.
Okay.
We can waffle on, can't we?
That's the whole point of this podcast. It allows you to just don't structure it in any particular way. It's so we can just wander off into different topics, and it gives it a bit of uniqueness. So it does. That's why we do it, because we never know what we're going to end up talking about. And I think sometimes directors and CEOs, once they relax, I'm not saying they let their guard down, but they open up, and you learn a lot more about the person or the people behind the projects. And people make companies, projects make companies as well. But if you don't have the right people behind these projects, then they're not worth anything.
It's so true. And I think, sometimes a CEO's role, the way I see a CEO's role is, it is not my job to be the best geologist, to be the best of this. It's my job to find the best geologists. It's my job to find the best CFOs. It's my job to give them the freedom to be the best they can. A CEO's role is not to be, as I put it, top of the litter on every part of your company. A CEO's role is to be part of the top of that with those individual people. And you shouldn't lose focus on it. Don't get wrapped up in your own thoughts. Share thoughts, listen, advise, and by all means, make decisions and lead. That's what you have to do, because we all know geologists can run off and spend a fortune in the field because they love to do it and drill. But, you've got to sometimes now and then pull the lead in a little tighter. But as a rule, you've got to put your trust in the team you build. And you've got to let them go forward. That's that. It's not rocket science. I ain't a rocket scientist.
Mark, I'll let you wrap it up.
Well, on that note, thank you very much, Nick, for your time. Today we're nearly up there, just under an hour. So that was great. Yeah, it went on, but it's good. Lots of good background there on you and on the company, of course. And thank you for your time. And we hopefully catch up again at some point in the future with the progress that's going on at West Mining Corp.
Oh, look, gents, it was fabulous to waffle. And thank you for allowing me the space to talk ad infinitum. And all I'll say is keep an eye on the press releases over the next few weeks. We've managed to sort of push forward, wrap some stuff up. We're building, we're getting that exploration season penciled in, ready to go. And there is a lot of news coming through. We've just got to, how can we put it, tie up the loose bits of string. It's great, absolutely great. It's going to be a good season. I think mining sector is going to see, ups and downs. Can't get me wrong on that, but I think it's an upward path. Upward path.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, Nick.
Absolute pleasure. All the very best.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.